All right, I'm Christian, host of the Most High Show, and sitting with me today is one of my good friends, Sheena.
Hey.
Say hi, Sheena.
What's up? Hello, Sheena. Mama, wife, daughter, sister, friend, great employee, boss lady, all those things.
Nice.
And I'm Danny.
That has to stay. That snort has to stay.
Somebody clap their hands once. Yay. That's the intro. And I'm rolling.
Nice. He's rolling. You're rolling?
Yes.
Toxic relationships are easy to spot when you're on the outside looking in. It's easy to tell when someone else is in a bad spot. How can you tell if you are in a toxic relationship? We are probably not going to give you that answer, but we're going to talk about a lot of stuff that might illuminate it. What did we talk about?
Shrek. Codependency.
Beyonce fans.
Removing the layers.
Removing layers.
Yes.
All that.
Keeping
it's
it real.
All good stuff. And it's free.
Free helps.
Yeah. All right, so we have to think about this topic, the toxic relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, I think I've probably been the toxic one in most of the relationships I've been in.
Yeah.
And so I brought up some false beliefs mm-hmm. that I feel like are things that contribute and can kill relationships right away. And so the four false beliefs, and these beliefs I actually learned while I was in rehab here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's performance trap,
yeah.
which is that I must meet certain standards to feel good about myself.
Absolutely.
Approval addict. I must be approved by others to feel good about myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then the blamer, those who fail, including me, are unworthy of love and desire and need to be punished.
Absolutely.
Oh, they need to be punished?
No, they don't need to be punished. But I think, you know, you kind of take that feeling on.
Yeah. And then shame. I am what I am. I can't change.
Yeah.
I feel hopeless about myself.
Stuck in them.
Out of those four, what do you think is the most, what resonates the most with either of you?
All of them. Like, the whole time you were saying, I think I've been on, I've struggled with all of them.
Yeah.
I think my most prevalent one is the performance, whatever that one was,
yeah.
that I have to earn. I was actually even thinking, I have an awkward conversation where, not an awkward conversation, I holding someone accountable in the situation I'm doing life with, and where I'm trying to live by a certain standard that we agreed to, this other person isn't, and I'm having this conversation, and I was thinking in terms of, okay, I need to do it God's way so God blesses me. And that was my thought on the way here, and I'm like, no, that's not why I do it God's way. It's not his blessing, it's not, I do it God's way because it's what's best for me, and as opposed to thinking, you know, if I continue to do it God's way, then he's going to bless me, and God,
right.
I've been working on this crap for so long, and I still struggle with it.
Yeah.
Right.
It's hard.
Yeah, I think performance probably resonates the most with me.
Yeah.
Just because I being the smart kid, you know, from a really young age, kind of already being, you know, positioned almost as, you know, like Simba the ha. So it's like, okay, I always need to deliver.
All right, they want me to go back and reread this.
Yes.
Because I was looking down.
Yes.
And touching
well, what
your
it was I was reading. I was looking at what I was reading, which is kind of like what you need to do.
It's kind of a requirement. You have to look at something to read
yeah.
it.
Right.
They haven't figured that out yet.
Chris,
actually,
right.
Braille.
I'm going to zoom on you.
Okay.
And so I can get, hold on.
Zoom in on me. He's going
to
zoom in.
Do you want me to hold it?
Check
then...
this out.
No. Okay, you are now full frame, so you can,
right.
you can, but you need to look at the camera occasionally. No, without the cell phone.
All right, so the performance trap. All right, let's just keep moving here. That's a big one, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We all can kind of identify.
Absolutely.
With that. That's instilled in us from youth. We could do a whole thing on that. Now, what is the result? How does somebody who's in that trap, they're in that place, what's the result of the relationship? Like, how does that affect the relationship?
The performance drive. Well, it's rough because it's almost a standard that's insatiable, you know, because mm-hmm. you can do really well and do great and you've like, awesome, I did that. Mm-hmm. But then the standard to increase, great is no longer good. Now you have to get to excellent. And then after excellent, there might be, you know, superb. So it can really, I think for me personally, that insatiable nature of trying to live up to this kind of like performance trap, it can drain you. It can make you constantly chase this goal that's really, it's like never ending. Like you think you're there and but then you see the finish line coming increasingly further away from you.
And do you actually enjoy the relationship?
Exactly.
Like there's no joy. Like I can't sit and just enjoy it if I'm so scared of screwing up and if I'm scared of failing or I'm a pleaser by nature, right? So if you're in a bad mood, it's my fault, so I gotta perform.
Absolutely.
There's no joy. There's no relaxation.
Well, that's a little more what I would think would be approval.
That'd be approval?
I think that's a little more approval.
Okay.
Because in performance, it's a little more internal, right? It's a little more saying that, okay, I need to achieve this certain route, this certain thing for that I can feel good about myself.
Absolutely.
But I think performance and approval come really close together, right? I mean, I think one of the reasons why, you know, people can become such workaholics.
Yes, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, because in work, hey, if I do good at work, I'm gonna reap the benefits of that really quickly. Either my boss or my coworkers are gonna give me accolades or clap their hands, say, hey, great job
on
that.
Pats on the back.
Maybe I get, you know, a bonus or some kind of money back for that. So it's really easy to see my efforts pay dividend.
Yeah.
Right. Where when your spiritual efforts don't always seem to pay dividends right away.
Yeah.
If you're lucky, you get to see it. So I think the two of those are very closely related.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And what something that I, you know, kind of grappled with, especially when it comes to like expressions of faith and the whole performance trap is, you know, when you either first come to, you know, to your faith or you find your church home, and you know, all of a sudden you're looking at that list of all the different ministry opportunities available, and you're like, I'm gonna be in the choir, I'm gonna be in the usher committee, I'm gonna be, you know, on this everything, and your abilities and places that you really should truly be at get watered down.
Right.
But perform, you know, I can say that I'm doing five different things, but what does that really mean in terms of what you're producing and how you're contributing to, you know, whether that be your job, your interpersonal relationships, or, you know, the ministry.
Right.
Yeah.
You get caught into this like service mode where you think that, okay, I got to go and do and perform. And I don't think that's really where it's, at least for Christianity and the spirituality of what Jesus teaches us is, he teaches us, you know, this kind of kingdom view, this closeness, this oneness with the Creator. And I think we kind of always go, well, I'll go and do, I'll do for you. And we don't necessarily know the one that we're doing it for.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think that kind of is what happens I know for me in my relationship with my wife, in the times when I was using drugs and working, that my job was so important because, well, I needed the money to get drugs. But I was also really caught in that performance trap. It was the thing that when I left rehab, you know, they circle you around and they all talk to you and they go, what are your concerns? You know what I mean? And everyone was like, oh, you're going to make it. You're going to do good. But the thing that everyone was concerned about was that I would get out and go immediately right back to working like I was.
Yeah.
And if I did do that, that it would immediately, I would kind of overload myself, and then I would find unhealthy ways to cope.
Yeah.
Right? And during those times when I was that with my wife, you know, I'm sure I wasn't the best husband because my focus wasn't on that relationship. Right? It wasn't on the here and now and in the moment. It was always on what's next. What can I get? What can I position or whatever?
Yeah.
You know? So she had to deal with a very toxic, you know.
Yeah. For me, when I was doing it, I was working at a church. And I mean, it was like my job. I was so good at so much of what I did. And then God told me to leave the church. And so I didn't have that job, and I had another job lined up, and it fell through, and then I ended up getting pneumonia. And so I literally, like, my performance trap was so bad that God's like, here, lay on your back for 2 weeks.
Yeah, I'm gonna shut you down.
And yeah, like, I literally, I was in bed, I was on bed rest for 2 weeks. I was sick for a few months, and I'm laying in bed, and I'm like, but I'm not doing anything for you. And he's like, I love you just as much, because I got so much of my self-worth, especially with it being ministry, because, I mean, I'm a full-time Christian. And so God loves me because I'm doing this, and I'm doing that, and then I'm just laid up in bed. I watched all of Netflix. Like, there was nothing left to watch. Except for these really, there were some good cheesy movies. And it was just the most eye-opening thing. And it was probably it was healing. Because now I have a job that I love. But it's not near as, you can't really get addicted to being a nanny. Like, you do well, and then you go home.
There is an end time.
Yeah,
Have you ever felt like you guys have been in a codependent relationship, or maybe where someone was codependent on you, and how did you deal with that?
I know now, because I'm like this. If anyone has any signs of being codependent, like there are,
like what's a sign? What would be a sign for you?
Trying to think of something I can say without giving it away. Advice. That's what I'm thinking. There's a certain situation I'm trying to phrase. I had a friend one time, and she was going through something I had been through, and I was trying to lead her towards good godly counseling, right? Because, I mean, I have some training, and I can help in some ways, and I can walk with you, but there comes a certain point where you need knowledge. I'm not trying to help you.
Yes.
And
someone
she was like,
needs to get paid to listen.
Yes. Yes. This is above my pay grade.
Yes, and this person was like, well, I don't need that. I have you. And I was like, no, you don't. Yeah. Like, not anymore. And
about that, like, the unhealthy thing is, it's really tough to really acknowledge. Like, that in itself is, like, a major thumbs up progress.
Like, I had to go through extreme life-changing experience to learn these things.
Yeah.
It's almost like these things should be taught, like, freshman in high
school.
Yes.
In terms of, like, Just when you mention that idea of unhealthy versus healthy and, you know, toxic, all of that. I remember at one point when me and my husband were just dating, and I, you know, finally, like, came to terms with the fact that I actually loved him, because it was like a struggle for me to even, like, acknowledge that I would allow that level of vulnerability in my life. You know, to allow someone to love me and let me love them. I remember at one point thinking about, okay, I might really like this guy, I might really love this guy, I might really want to be with this guy, but how can we be together? Like, we haven't gone through any drama. Like, that was, like, the criteria. Like,
oh, wow.
Like, we haven't had a serious fight, like, we haven't tried to maybe fight each other, like, this is, how do I know we can stand the test of time if we haven't had this turmoil in our relationship? And it's like, when you start developing unhealthy and toxic relationships with just pain, you know, like that you find definition and value in being able to endure pain.
Yeah.
That's
a badge of honor.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, especially in the Christian world, it is like, I can carry the weight.
Yeah.
And then just be like, oh, it's too easy. It can't be good.
And that's
It's weird how the pain and the toxicity of certain relationships with anything, hey, you kind of can get comfortable with that.
Oh yeah.
Right? It becomes the norm.
Oh yeah.
Right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. The you find function in dysfunction.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, when you think about toxic relationships, is the most ultimate toxic relationship is a physically or verbally abusive relationship.
Yeah.
Oh.
Right? Like, that's the...
Yeah.
That's, like, ultimate toxic level.
Yeah, but that was at the root of, you know, what I mentioned earlier about, you know, and being with my husband, questioning whether or not we had a chance because we hadn't been through any dramatic or traumatic situations, because the previous relationship before him was very kind of emotionally and manipulative. Verbally, you know, borderline, definitely verbally abusive. And the last time I was, you know, with this guy, it went to physical. And the blame and shame and all of that, like, what did I do? I must have done something to make him feel like this is true. Or like what he's telling me, he keeps telling me this. So it must be true. There must be something off, you know, and the, I mean, all those things, approval, you know, yeah. We feel that shame, like I'm just always going to be like this. I can't do right. I'm to blame to this. Well, maybe I'll do whatever he says in order to, wow. you know, get his approval. And, it caused a lot of friendships to go away. It, you know, I stopped going out because, you know, I didn't want to even put myself in a position where I would do something that would be displeasing to him. Mm. Because I must, you know, because you know me, whenever I go out, I do something inappropriate that's going to make him react.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, it gets really nasty because you start really questioning, am I who I think I am? You know?
Right.
Because this other person keeps telling me that I'm doing this, or they keep, you know, didn't get to consistently, but, you know, he keeps hitting me or he keeps cussing me out. Maybe I'm everything he says. Wow. I am.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Yeah. And so you get trapped, and that's how you get trapped into that, into a relationship like that.
Absolutely. Or thinking that is how relationships go.
Right.
Which is even worse, because even once you get rid of that one, you start trying to find little repeats of that person in right. somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, how I ultimately, you know, got out of the relationship is, this is kind of a story. I was in college and I was getting ready to go out, and he pulled up on me and stopped me from going out. And I had a moment of just where I just snapped, and I realized it's okay for me to do these things. It's okay for me to be with my friends. Like, they're not the ones who are hurting me. You're hurting me. Ooh. Like,
mm-hmm. Moment of clarity.
Yeah, there was that moment. I could actually see it. It's crazy to think about it because it's so poignant. Sitting in his car right along where the party was and seeing people walk by and seeing my friends walk by and see me, but then totally turn away from me because I haven't returned a phone call in a month. I've ignored them in the streets, and being like, no, this is the problem.
Wow.
This is everything that I'm not in this moment. I'm blessed to have had that kind of snap out. Not everyone has that ability, but just recognizing I'm different than who I was before I was with you, and not in a good way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not in a good way, in a very toxic way.
Yeah.
I definitely, you know, in while I was in this relationship, I did have some friends who, you know, at times would kind of give me that nudge. Mm-hmm. And in some ways almost giving me that reminder, hey girl, you used to love to do this. I haven't seen you do that. What's up with that?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, hey, you don't look like yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's tough because, like you were talking about, when you acknowledge that you might have a friend or relationship that could create a, you know, potentially, you know, draining situation or tough situation for you, it's hard to watch someone sit in that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's only
heartbreaking.
It is heartbreaking. And there's so many times you could tell somebody, dude, something's wrong.
Yeah. And they don't hear you. They can't, I mean, unless... You know, unless the Holy Spirit, or unless they get those aha moments, they're like, it's like the from Peanuts character. It's like the teacher from the Peanuts.
Yeah. But it's important, you know, what I would do is, you know, anyone who may know somebody who's in a very toxic relationship, you know, it's hard because they have to be receptive to what you're saying, but still love on them.
Don't give up.
Still let them know that you're there. Because what helped me was to know that, you know what, when this is over, there's a community of people who have been waiting for me to come back, who are loving on me, who I don't have to feel a sense of shame that when I come to them, like, I know I've been kind of crazy the past 2-3 years. Like, I know they're going to be like, girl, you know, welcome back.
Yeah.
We love you. Whatever happened, that's behind you.
Yeah.
So I was really blessed in, like, people like yourself where I know, okay, they maybe haven't talked to me yet because I didn't allow them to be in my life in the way that they could. Because for them to be in my life would be a constant reminder that something is wrong. Something is wrong.
Yeah.
You know, so even you start pushing those people out that are like, uh-oh, they see it.
Yeah.
Can't let them see it, you know. The great thing also about having that community of friends that welcome you back is that, you know, for you to be in a space of love and openness, you can do that with them, right? So I definitely... had some of those friends still be there and encourage me to kind of still figure things out. But it was a long process, to be really honest. You know, even years later, even when I was in a new relationship with my husband, I didn't realize how much of that previous trauma I had carried into my current relationship. Right. It wasn't until one day, actually randomly at work, one of my coworkers came up behind me and kind of like, you know, put his hands on my shoulder from behind, and I freaked out, totally freaked out, and started crying, and then I was embarrassed, and, you know, it was as he knew something clearly was up, like, because all I did was just go, hey, how you doing? But that reminded me of my last encounter with that, you know, that ex, where he ended up putting his hands around my neck. So it was years later, but I thought I was done. Love is really what brings that awareness.
Yeah.
That, wow, this is a negative thing that I'm still taking with me, and someone loves me enough to allow me to see that and work through it.
Right. Yeah. Well, and the love of a good man, right?
Yeah. I mean, that helps.
You married a pretty amazing dude.
I did.
Who loved you through the transition, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I've been really blessed in that regard, and you know from personal experience what it's like to have that person in your corner.
Oh, yeah.
It makes you, you know, and for some people, that person ultimately is Jesus, right? Because I feel like that is the manifestation of his love through another, you know, that when they can see you for all your faults, all your trauma.
And love you more. Wow. Yeah. That's good. We just got real. Shame, and the blamer. Those are our last two.
Mm-hmm.
The blame is that those who fail, including myself, need to be punished, right?
Yeah.
And so that's one. If that's your belief or that's your trap that you're in, then you're not going to accept a loving, gracious God, much less loving, gracious people.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to always be thinking, "What are you trying to get out of this situation?" Yeah. Right? I mean, for years. That's what people were to me. They were a means to an end, right? And so now in living life in a more holistic way, that I actually enjoy getting to know people, but I think that there are a lot of people that's what people are for. They're we use people to get what we need to get. And I think it's because some of these false beliefs are in their own head. And so if I'm all this, then you must be all that.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to trust you. And,
Well, it's easier to be transactional with people, like to not have emotions invested.
Right.
Right. Because I can't be hurt if I don't care
about
you. And I won't feel that sense of blame and shame if you don't matter.
Right.
So it's just like, okay, I'll use you for what I need to use you, even though there's a possibility of us being able to have a beautiful, fruitful relationship. But for the sake of not feeling that shame that I know is going to happen because I'm going to mess up anyway.
Yeah.
Right. Because I'm not worthy of this.
And I'm not going to let things get out of control.
Exactly.
I've got to control it, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think the thing that, like, when you see somebody who's kind of in these, it's hard to acknowledge when someone's in this, because usually if you're in a relationship and the other person has these toxic qualities, you know, it's hard to look at them and go, feel bad for them. But I know for me, like, that was the big thing, that was one of the things that helped me to change and turn the corner, was when my wife started looking at me like, wow, she felt bad for me because I couldn't stop getting high. You know, and I can remember those couple times when she was like, she wasn't even mad. You know, it was like this new level of like, ooh, like, you're not even mad, you just feel sorry for me. Like, that was not a good place to be. But it was her acknowledging, hey, he's unhealthy, and I'm not the one unhealthy, he's the one unhealthy.
Yeah.
And so there was healing to be able to have. I think, like, you know, if you're in a toxic relationship at this point, and you may have heard some things, and you're like going, oh yeah, I need to break this thing off, it's maybe pause before you send that text message and think through, because potentially, you know, if you can see through that, there is healing and hope that can happen in people. I mean, you might not be the one responsible for that.
Yeah.
But I think if you understand when someone is constantly, maybe they're constantly holding you to a higher standard. Probably in their head, they're probably holding themselves to some crazy standard. Yeah. And they're just projecting that back onto you.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
When you're dealing with someone in a toxic relationship, you also have to ask yourself, how did I contribute? How did I contribute to this? Like, they have a toxic relationship with drugs and addiction. You know, not that you enabled them, but really, like, you know, what in what ways, knowingly or unknowingly, am I supporting them?
Yes.
Right.
And do I need to walk away? I mean, that's a lot of times, I think, from my experience, where I've had to just walk away. I mean, like, me being here with you is just going to make it worse. And you are not, and from a spiritual point of view, you're not going to lean on Jesus if you have me. And so, I mean, there have been several times when I've had to be like, I know I come across completely bitchy, but it's just kind of like, I'm not Jesus. And I know that because I made the mistake. I've worked with a couple people, and one, it was very, very obvious, someone I was working with trying to help. And I was dealing with guilt from another situation. So I was kind of like, I'm going to help you through this. And then once I saw it, and I had actually someone much wiser than me point out, you're not her savior.
Mm-hmm.
And being like, but I never... And she's like, I think her exact words like, and that's gross, and that's disgusting, and you need to talk to Jesus about it. And I was like, it is. And so just realizing, so ever since then, that's one, maybe the codependency, I'm kind of like this. I'm like... I'm not your savior. Like, I will walk next to you, but if you are going to lean on me, and so I think in a lot of relationships, at least from my experience, I've had to just be like, we can't be people anymore.
Wow.
And that's rough.
Yeah.
When you really think about that, especially when you love someone, you know, when you realize, I can't really help you.
Yeah.
Or I can help you, but I might lose myself in the process.
Yes.
That's really rough to kind of come to terms with that and just walk away. It takes a lot. I feel like it takes a lot more strength to potentially walk away from a situation than it does to kind of stay in it and wallow through it.
I don't know how this plays into the whole toxic relationship thing.
But I'm throwing a wrench in it.
But I'm going to throw it anyway. Well, I had this thought recently that, you know, it's like we put layers on top of who we really are, mm-hmm. right? So these false beliefs can kind of become layers. And the one that makes me think of, like, I'm this way, I've always been this way, that's what I'm going to be, that when you kind of make these declarative statements about yourself, you kind of, like, you put these fake barriers up.
Yeah.
I've always been this way, that's what I'm going to be. I'm not going to get past that. And so... it's almost like you close off opportunities or growth, you know, from yourself because you kind of put this,
you know,
when you say, this is the way I'm going to be. And then that can result in something else. And then there's this other layer and this other layer that kind of becomes, so you're like almost this person that's like, you know, like those Russian dolls, you know, you're like, the real you is this little tiny Russian doll in there, but there's all these things that are wrapped around it.
Yeah.
That, you know, I think some people will equate it to the peeling of an onion, right?
So you can get through. Like Shrek said.
Huh?
Like Shrek said.
Like Shrek said.
Yeah, it's an onion.
You're not going to quote Shrek again.
Is that a thing?
That's a
is that a thing? Okay.
This he says donkey.
I didn't know how we got here, but I was rolling with y'all.
It's my favorite.
Sure.
He says like, onion. I can't
just,
bring it.
Just like Shrek said.
Just like Shrek said.
It's not a parfait.
It's actually like donkey's head.
No, donkey's head was a parfait.
Oh.
Because he's like, everybody loves a parfait.
Yeah.
We're not parfaits, we're onions.
Right. There's all these like layers, you know, and you gotta get through that. I think that's like for me, when I look at Jesus and his teachings, I see somebody who's like always cut in every conversation, okay? If you've ever read the accounts of Jesus, you know, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, these accounts of what happened, what Jesus did. You always see him speaking to the heart of the person.
Yeah.
A person comes to them with this, and he just hits them with the left.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I love that about Jesus, that he's always going to the heart.
Yeah.
Someone comes with this, they're trying to show this layer, or this mask, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And he's always seeing past that.
Yeah.
And I think for us as, you know, as you become more healthy, I think you start kind of seeing past your own layers.
Absolutely.
And then you start seeing past other people's layers.
Yeah.
Right?
I think so. Because you start seeing some of those of yourself in the layers of other people. You know what I mean? Like, oh, yeah. Like, I think as you get older, hopefully you get a little more wise and aware. Because I know that there are definitely times when I'll meet, like, younger versions of myself. And I'm like, I remember when I used to think I had to do that. Like, that's cute, you know? And it's good because it's a reminder of your own growth, right? But I think it's also another, like, there's probably more work I need to do, you know? Because it's hard to just look at you and who you really are and all your flaws and all your nakedness. And, and I don't mean that literally, like, you know, just like when you strip it all away. It's really hard to look at that and still say, you know what? I'm good.
I'm good, My the layers reminded me, actually, I started, a few weeks ago, I started seeing my old counselor again. Some stuff came up, and I found myself doing some coping mechanisms and stuff, and I was like, this is not good. And one of the things she had me do is an affirmation thing, because this is just the way I am. I never would have phrased it like that, but there were some mindsets and some struggles and some things I would say to myself that they weren't true, they were contrary to what God said, and certain things I feel like God's put in my heart, and I was just, it was all getting muddled up. And so, like, I have it taped all over, and it's like, I'm Stuart Smalley. I'm like,
you're good enough.
You're smart enough.
Yeah.
So the affirmation thing, when she first suggested it, I was like, okay. And it has come, it has helped out so much on things that, things I've done that I hate, like actions that I've had that I've hated, but I thought, you know, I'm stuck this way. It's always going to be this way. Mm-hmm. Save a miracle. And God is like, oh, here's the miracle.
Yeah.
You.
You
in your true form.
I'm not going to miraculously, I'm not taking this one away. You're going to work through it and you're going to own it. And it's been fascinating.
There's a saying that if you want to serve God, then, or serve Jesus, then don't get married. But if you want to be like Jesus, get married. Because marriage will force you to, you know, address all these things, right?
Yes. I mean,
if you're in a healthy marriage.
Or walk away.
Yeah.
Or divorce because you don't want to go through all that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy. You know, that is very true. First, that is very true in my own experience. I've been, you know, married to my husband now for 9 years. And... you know, I think I've said it before, like that idea of your spouse being your mirror, you know, cause you know, you see you through your own eyes, right? But your spouse sees you probably with a little bit more
touch of
reality.
You see yourself with a Snapchat.
Like I have the flower halo, like there's like
eyeliner,
makeup, you know, there's a Beyonce fan when I look at myself, it's awesome. But when you spend enough time with someone and they and hopefully you see them enough and you talk to them and communicate with them and your the vulnerability comes out.
Yeah.
And especially if you're trying to grow and progress, hopefully your partner holds you accountable.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, you say that, but this is really what you did.
Right.
Or do you know what you said? When you said that, do you know what you what you were trying to do? Like, do you know how you made me feel? Like, that is... And it's really hard. That's probably one of the toughest things about marriage is that quality of it.
Well, I think we're talking about communication. I think that's in any toxic relationship. Communication, I think, is the one clear way to identify if it is toxic and to fix it if it can be.
Yeah.
Is to be able to communicate. I think like in hearing your stories, it sounds like you've learned to just go ahead and be upfront. When you're sensing this and when you're feeling this, it's to say, okay, hey, I'm going to address this, you know, and I think sometimes in relationships we don't want to address that because we don't know how to communicate.
What's interesting, when I sense other people doing it, like there've been in the last year or something, I've had some friendships and things, and I have found myself going into the unhealthy. And when I'm in it, I know I'm in it, but I don't know what to do, you know, and it is hard when it's hard to walk away. I mean, it's interesting because it's when people who are trying to be codependent on me, I'm like, ooh, no. But then if I'm trying to be codependent or unhealthy or, you know, get the approval of someone else, I'm like, well, was okay this time. Like, right. Yeah. And then and in the midst, I'm like, God, I don't know what to do. And then at the end, I'm like, okay, Jesus, next time, can I want to see it in the beginning, right? Like, that's my goal, is to see the red flags and to see mm-hmm. my own behavior and get rid of my Beyonce fan. Mm-hmm. That would be a good book.
That would. Get rid of your Beyonce fan. But it has to have, like, girl.
Yeah.
Girl, you ain't got no Beyonce.
Yeah. Girl, you ain't Beyonce.
Yeah.
That's the book. That's the bestseller.
Copyright trademark.
Girl, you ain't Beyonce. But, I think, you know, going to what you were talking about, that those layers and recognizing it.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the beautiful things I think about, depending on how you look at it, about being single is you have that option of being like, you know what, you crazy, I'm yeah. about to walk away.
Yeah.
I can see it coming. I can see the crazy coming. But, you know,
yeah.
why it helps in the marriage piece in terms of moving the layers is you've hopefully committed to this person.
Yeah.
So when it gets tough, it's not just like, you know what, something's up, I'm out. No, right. we have to sit here
well,
and figure this out.
But not only in marriage, but in the community of believers.
Yeah.
Right? We're supposed to be committed to each other
yeah.
in a deep way. And so we're not supposed to just abandon each other.
Yeah.
It's like your problem,
I'm
you know?
Done. No.
Yeah. Like there's been times when I've walked with somebody through a life crisis and I've gotten to a point where I've gone, okay, I need a pause on this because you're draining me.
Yeah.
You know, but my commitment to you and your health as a brother is not gonna stop.
Yeah.
But I need to, like,
just setting healthy boundaries.
Yeah.
I think what the community also does though is hopefully provides consistency, right?
Uh-huh.
It for like it's almost and continuity in the sense of I can only give you so many versions of myself so long, so many times.
Mm. Right.
But if I see you every Sunday
yes.
or if I see you every day because I have a friendship with yeah. you, after a while, all the facade,
yes.
the masks we were talking about
yeah.
earlier start to
yeah.
drop in.
Yeah, like, I don't feel like putting this mask on.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I've been with them 10 times already. Yeah.
Exactly. So that's the beautiful thing about community.
Yeah.
Yeah. We all remember.